this take place? It was the night. I know everybody thinks, well, that's not a time of day. It's a night. But no, that's not the way they thought of it. It's the fourth watch of the night, time of day. It happened after midnight. After midnight, in that dark time, what was the weather like? It was stormy. Now, you tell me, what kind of story starts like this? It was a dark and stormy night.
You'll want to be sure to catch the rest of Pastor Terry's message in just a moment. But first, we want to thank you for tuning in to the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast with pastor and author Terry Bailey. This broadcast is also produced as a free podcast, which you can find on iTunes or become a subscriber through our website. We'll have more information at the end of the broadcast, but for right now, let's join Pastor Terry as he preaches this insightful message.
Sometimes we use things called idioms and we speak them without examination of the thought, but we really understand them instinctively because that's how a thing gets to be an idiom. So when we have shared frustrations or common problems or community-wide difficulties, we say we are all in the same boat. See, we all know this idiom, and you're in the same boat. It means you share these difficulties, and I think there's a reason for choosing the boat beyond the fact that I think that for us it's obviously tied to the Bible story that we're going to talk about today. But, you know, if you're all in the same car, at least if it slows down a little, you got the prospect of getting out. When you're in the boat, getting out is a difficulty, particularly if the boat is in the middle of the ocean. Getting out is not generally considered an improvement on your situation, particularly if you are like me. Most of you won't know this about me. It's not an important thing for you to know about me. I am not a floater. I can swim. I can swim just fine. And I am not afraid of water. I don't have any trouble with that. But if I stop swimming, I start sinking. And, you know, way back when I was a child, all the other children could lay back on their back and relax and float in the swimming pool. And I've done it, and I've been careful. I don't tense up. I lay down on my back, and I relax. And my heels start going like this. And when my heels get directly under me, my head starts going like this. And when my heels hit the bottom of the pool, I kind of slowly sit down on the pool. And then I find myself sitting on the bottom of the pool thinking, well, forget this. And quit relaxing and stand up and get back up top and start swimming because I don't float. So getting out of the boat, not an improvement of the situation for me. I will tell you just briefly of Michael's first trip, whitewater rafting, which is synonymous with Michael's last trip, whitewater rafting. She thought that sounded like fun. Maybe she got in the boat for the first 30 minutes. Her constant refrain was, I want out of this boat. I want out of this boat. I want out of this boat. And then we hit a great big rock, and the front of the raft went way up in the air, and Michael fell out of the boat, and she did the only thing she could think of to do, which was to grab a hold of my shirt and pull me into the river with her. And we're in the river, and you can't just stop the raft in the middle of the deep current, so I'm hanging onto the raft with one hand and hanging onto Michael with the other hand, and she developed a new constant refrain. I want back in the boat! I want back in that boat! Get me back in the boat! So I got a good grip on the sturdy denim waistband of her blue jean shorts and back into the boat. She whined about other things the rest of the day. But all in the same boat. That is the story that Mark read for us this morning. The disciples were all in the same boat in a dark and dangerous situation. The gospel parallels on this include three of the gospels, Matthew, Mark, and John. Luke does not bring it up. Luke, in fact, skips this entire portion of Jesus' ministry. The rest of them are still working on that southern shore, the Lake of Galilee. Luke has already said enough of the Galilean stuff and started talking about Jesus working his way south for his first trip to Jerusalem. And people just thought different parts of the story were more important. But in the three Gospels, Matthew, Mark, and John, that include this account, each has at least one detail that is not in the others. Matthew includes something you're very familiar with. Matthew tells how Peter asked to get out of the boat and walk on the water to Jesus, and how he became overcome with fear and began to sink, and Jesus had to lift him up, and then they got back in the boat. Mark and John just don't deal with that for whatever reasons. It wasn't the part of the story that they thought was appropriate for the message that they were getting to. And some people call this a contradiction. I do not call this a contradiction. Here's a contradiction. If Mark had said, "That stupid Matthew doesn't know what he's talking about, nobody got out of the boat," that would be a contradiction. This is just a difference based on what part of the story they thought would most impact their listeners, which were different demographic groups. As to John's unique detail, I will come shortly. I need first to say that Matthew and Mark both agree that Jesus made his disciples get in the boat and made them go away. The imperative mode is clear in the New Testament Greek language. He made them, ordered them to get in the boat and go away, specifically so that he alone could deal with the crowd, which was the 5,000 men plus women and children that he had just fed with a small amount of loaves and fishes. That strikes me as a curious detail. Why should Jesus make his disciples go away so that he can deal with this crowd personally? The answer comes in John's unique detail, which I am ready for now. John tells us that after Jesus fed the 5,000 men plus women and children on the small amount of food, they were determined by force, if necessary, to make him their king. It means that maybe 10,000 people were all worked up into a mob mentality, going to grab Jesus and drag him down to the hall of the provincial Roman governor Pilate, or the palace of Herod, or somewhere, and say, Hey, you guys in there, here is our new king. Ha! First, Jesus didn't come to be that kind of king. Second, as to the crucifixion, which would surely follow, it wasn't time yet, and he needs to calm these people down, and he needs to send them home. He needs to do it without this thing getting worked up anymore. But the apostles, the disciples, at this point those of you who have been with me following along in the Gospel of Mark to this point, you tell me, the crowd is saying, "We're going to make Jesus king by any means necessary." Do you think the apostles' reaction would have been more like, "What?" or "Yeah"? Which way? They're going to be, "Yeah, he needs to get these guys gone because they are only going to contribute to the problem, and then he needs to disperse this crowd." So he orders the apostles into the boat and he sends them away. And then I come to the unique detail in Mark, which strikes me as the strangest thing in any of the three versions. They all agree, after the disciples were gone in the boat, Jesus went up on a high hill to pray. And as the night came on and the moon came up way into the after midnight hours, he is able from his elevated vantage point to look out on the lake and see that the storm has come up, and to see out there in the middle of the lake the little miniaturized by distance boat floundering in the waves, not making any progress. And he knows his disciples are in trouble. So he comes down from the hill where he was praying, and he walks on the surface of the lake waves and wind notwithstanding, out toward where his disciples are floundering in the boat. And then Mark says, and he intended to pass them by. And I'm like, what? I mean, the whole thing was he looked out there and saw that they were in trouble. And he goes to all the trouble of walking on the water to get to where they are. And he intended to pass them by. Now, there are three usual attempts made by scholars to explain this curious little detail. One is that it was a faith thing, that before he sent them away, Jesus said to them, I will meet you on the other side. And therefore, they just should know. There goes Jesus. He's going to the other side. He said we'd meet them there. Nothing to be afraid of. He can't be wrong. We're okay now, guys. That seems a little stretched to me. The other two possible explanations rely on the fact that the language for that passing by thing is a little bit funny. And without going into the technicalities, let me just give you briefly the two variations on it. Some people think that it is a reference to the Old Testament language about the theophanies, those times when God appeared to a person in person. For instance, God sheltered Moses in the cleft of the rock and he passed before him. And they think that they're hearkening back to that language, that Jesus passed by the disciples in the boat like God passed before Moses in the cleft of the rock, or alternately, like he passed before Elijah when he hid him there on the mountainside and came by as the flaming fire and the earthquake and all that. That it is a reference back to that kind of language, that he didn't mean to pass by them and go on without them, that he meant to pass before them so they would see him in his glory. And I think to myself, well, maybe. And yet that's not the kind of thing that Mark does anywhere else in his gospel. If there was a gospel writer that was going to do that, I think it would be Matthew, because Matthew is particularly concerned with the Jewish people. If somebody was going to make a veiled, cryptic reference to very occasional Old Testament language and expect his readers to get it, it would be Matthew. Mark is writing to blue-collar Roman people, and I don't think they would have the first idea that he had just made a reference of any kind to anything in that. So I kind of doubt that that is the case either. So I come to the last possibility, and it is the one that makes the most sense to me. And if anybody wants to get together and discuss the technical aspects of the Greek language, I'll be fine to do that with you, but I won't bring it to the pulpit. I think that here is what was going on. Jesus meant to pass them by, but he meant for them to follow him. Picture it as he's passing them by, inviting them, come on, I will lead you to safety. I think, and it's only I think, so you take it for what it's worth, but I think that that is the picture we need to get. Jesus wants the disciples to follow him. The disciples are not primed to respond to such an invitation at the moment. This is the second incident in as many weeks that is probably appropriate as Halloween approaches. You will recall the first one, that on the ministry of the apostles when they were sent out two by twos and they performed various miracles with their own hand, King Herod concluded, John the Baptist, whom I slew, has come back from the dead to haunt me. A very Halloween-y kind of thought. In this instance, let's just start with this. What time of day did this take place? It was the night. I know everybody thinks, well, that's not a time of day. It's a night. But no, that's not the way they thought of it. It's the fourth watch of the night. Time of day. It happened after midnight. After midnight, in that dark time, what was the weather like? It was stormy. Now you tell me, what kind of story starts like this? It was a dark and stormy night. We all know what kind of story starts like that. Romances, right? No, scary, scary stories. And the apostles thought that they saw a ghost. That's what it says. That's not what I think. It's just what it says. They thought they saw a ghost. It was dark and it was stormy. And these men were in trouble at sea, rowing like crazy, getting nowhere fast, just waiting that the next wave would be a little bigger and steeper and tip them over backwards, or one might come crossways or turn them so that it rolled over them broadside and capsized their boat, and then they would all be in the ocean in the dark and stormy night. Not a good situation. And then they see a form walking on the water out there in the dark and the storm. And they think to themselves, it's a ghost. And if I'm correct, they think to themselves, the ghost wants us to follow him. All right. Just on the face of it, how many of you think that would be a bad idea? Never, never follow the ghost. Everybody who has watched the scary movies knows this. When the little child ghost runs giggling through the room and disappears into the closet, you don't go in there. And when the weeping woman ghost walks through the room and up the stairs and disappears into the attic, you don't go up into the attic. Never follow the ghost. I saw this movie once. It was in Spanish with English subtitles, for what it's worth. But the ghost appears on the sea to the sailors and beckons them to follow, and they follow. And as soon as they start following, the kind of eerie orchestral music starts kicking in. And then the camera focuses in on this big giant rock with the waves crashing against it. And then the music changes and it goes, dun, dun, dun! And bang! The boat crashes into the rock and all the sailors go down into the depths. And the ghost smiles and descends to go down and join all those whom he has just ghostified. Everybody knows the three cardinal rules of scary stories, right? You don't open the cellar door. You don't touch the strange object that just fell from the sky. And you never follow the ghost. This cannot end well. I believe that anybody who says that they could be in the same situation that the disciples were in and nothing like that would even remotely occur to them is probably lying to you or not thinking straight. But I believe this to be the situation. Jesus wants them to follow him, and under the circumstances, they are like, I don't think so. And despite that one theory that I referred to above, that this could have just been a faith thing, that Jesus expected them to take it for granted that they would get where he said they would go, despite maybe that a lack of faith is involved, Jesus does not say to them, oh, you superstitious idiots, grow up, children. Are you still sleeping with a nightlight? Sucking your thumbs? He doesn't say anything like that. He says, take courage. It is me. And then he gets in the boat with them. And there is a sudden, marked improvement in their circumstances. Now let's just pause for a minute in the narrative and honestly answer the question. How many of us have been frightened? I have. Now it's been a long time since I was particularly afraid of ghosts or boogeymen. That kind of passes with childhood. But I still understand fear that day when the doctor uses the word cancer. And it sets our minds reeling. And we're afraid about what is going to happen. Jesus does not come to us saying, "What's the matter with you? Don't you remember how I pulled the sting from death?" He comes to us saying, "I remember this one really long bad night in Gethsemane. I understand what you're going through. But take courage. It is me. And I will walk through this valley with you." Or things don't go well at work, and it occurs to us that we may be laid off or outright fired, and we don't have an immediate plan for replacing our salary, but we do have ongoing bills and expenses, and we don't know what we're going to do. What are we going to do? What are we going to do? And we're worried and frightened. And Jesus does not come to us saying, "Oh, come on, sparrows and lilies, duh." But he says, "Take courage. It is me. Maybe you don't know where you're going, but I will go there with you." And then he steps over the gunwale into the midst of our dark, stormy, frightening circumstances. And when he joins us in the boat, there is a marked improvement. Back to the narrative of the actual story. He got in the boat with them and the storm stopped. And Mark says the disciples were amazed. His words are, the disciples were utterly astonished. And he explains it by saying they were utterly astonished because they hadn't gained any insight from the incident of the loaves, which is not the first such incident through which they have passed, only the latest. It was just a few hours ago. It is now after midnight, and this was just before dark. Jesus fed 5,000 men plus women and children on a little teeny handful of food, and they hadn't gained any insight from that, so that when Jesus resolves their current difficulty, they are utterly astonished. Didn't see that coming. I asked how many of us have been frightened, and most of us raised our hands or nodded. How many of us have found that Jesus was with us and led us through those frightening circumstances? Isn't it about time we gained a little insight to know that when he says, "I will never leave you or forsake you," to know when he says that all things, including our lives, are in his hands and that he cares for us, and that he has a plan for us, and the plan covers our whole life and goes beyond that? Isn't it about time that we gained some insight so that we enter into dark, stormy, difficult periods of our life secure in the knowledge that even if we don't know exactly how yet, Jesus is going to walk through this with me? And I will come out the far end with him. Isn't it about time that we gained such insight? I don't know everybody's situations, but just as our time with our prayer list indicates, there's a lot of dark storminess out there right now. Lots of things to be concerned or frightened or sad about. And I want you to hear the voice of Jesus saying, take courage. It's me. And wherever you're going, I'm climbing in here with you. And we will go together.
We want to take a moment to thank all of you, our listeners, for setting aside time each week for the Indian Run Christian Church broadcast on this station. You can find out more about the church with a quick visit to our website at www.christforeastcanton.com. On behalf of Pastor Terry and all the folks at Indian Run Christian Church, I pray God's blessing on you and your family.